back. Oh, no, wait a minute. I'm the one that was gone. Hi, this is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. It is Valentine's evening. And a great big thank you to Brad Friedman for sitting in for over a week. And yes, we'll be talking about the attack on Brad Friedman by the Chamber of Commerce spies and rat bastards that are attempting to silence all liberal media, progressive media, investigative journalism in this country. I don't know where to begin. Anyway, Brad, thanks, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I've got your back. Trust me. When the barricades go up, you know where I'll be. You've been here at my house. You've been here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. We have stood out on the back porch with 30-06s and did a little target practice. I'm afraid it's coming. Just the audacity of these Chamber of Commerce sons of bitches to go after people at Daily Kos or Media Matters or Brad Friedman because they are telling the truth. Oh, well. Our day in Independence Square is getting closer and closer. Yeah, a lot happened while we were gone. At one point during the week out on the Caribbean, word came across CNN that Mubarak had finally resigned. And 90% of the people or 95% of the people on board, it really didn't mean that much, if it was even noticeable. But some of us who had seminars planned that afternoon talked about it and the significance of what had occurred. A U.S.-backed dictator who had ruled Egypt with an iron hand, with the support of the U.S. governments, plural, for the past three decades, had fallen. As a matter of fact, just to kind of recap that, let me just read to you what Prairie 2 sent me. I don't want to focus a lot on what happened in Egypt because there's no way to really adequately talk about it on this program. I'm sure you all have followed the events during that week. I know we did. Every morning on board this sailing vessel, we were handed a computer printout, an email, as it were, synopsis of events as reported by the New York Times. And also we had access to CNN International on board the ship. So there were no real events that occurred that we weren't aware of while they were in real time. No, we couldn't get Al Jazeera. We talked to the captain of the vessel, who was Dutch. And while he sympathized with us, he made it very clear that there's no way we could get Al Jazeera. This is what Prairie 2 wrote. With the departure of the, quote, president for life, end quote, Mubarak of Egypt, labor unions across that country are out in the streets now demanding improvements in their lot in life. Even the police, who were a week before clubbing pro-democracy protesters, are themselves protesting in the street. They're probably kidding themselves about how much better off they will be now. It wasn't the protesters that really drove out the Mubarak family, but the army in what you could call a soft coup. At best, the new order imposed by the army will spread the wealth around to a broader oligarchy, and the bulk of the population will get a few crumbs, and if they are lucky, some trappings of democracy with less corruption overall. Egypt's real problems didn't come from Mubarak, but from the people that kept him in power. Transnational corporations and mega banking concerns ruled Egypt through Mubarak, and they aren't going to tolerate any real reform. Not that they are likely to take action right away. They rarely do anything at the point of a gun. But that is always an option. Ask anyone we've invaded in the last 100 years. They will, of course, send in the economic hitmen to inform whoever replaces Mubarak about the realities of life, just like they do with American presidents. Ironically, the Egyptians rebelled because of the inequality between the rich and the poor, while in the United States, that inequality is much worse. While at the same time, most Americans seem to accept the notion that the middle class is making too much money and must accept onerous cuts in pay, the horde of new Republican governors and state legislatures are gearing up to impose dramatic pay cuts on state workers, to destroy unions and slash government programs in the name of austerity and the preservation of tax cuts for the rich. In Ohio, the Republican governor pledges to eliminate a staggering deficit without raising taxes, but two-thirds of the state's budget merely passes through to local governments. This means if you live in a county or city that can't raise its own taxes to cover the governor's cuts, that's too bad. After all, police and firefighters are luxury items you can learn to live without. Buy yourself a gun and organize a bucket brigade. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. President Obama is on the austerity bandwagon with some mean-spirited cuts in his new budget, slashing heating assistance to the poor, cutting aid to cities to provide clean drinking water, cutting Pell Grants for college, cutting aid to hire teachers and for cops on the beat. A shrewd political move on Obama's part. By cutting things Republicans were eager to take the axe to, they must now out-scrooge him. Of course, if you're shivering in your unheated apartment, afraid to drink the water while somebody's breaking down your door and the cops won't come, oh well, you won't need to finish that college application anyway. In Wisconsin, where the progressive movement started over 100 years ago, the new Republican governor is about to effectively end all public employee unions in the state and impose drastic pay cuts. Public worker strikes will become illegal, and the right-wing thug has put the National Guard on notice that any public protests are to be met with force. The army would not fire on civilians in Egypt. But this isn't Egypt. Prairie2.com. I understand that Iranian students by the tens of thousands are in the streets tonight. So far, the surge toward democracy, or the surge away from U.S.-backed totalitarian-style governments, has been confined to North Africa and the Middle East. I wonder how long that is going to continue. We have Allison Madison sent me some information that I'll share with you. James in Seattle. Maine Coyote. And some other stuff. I'm going to try to get to it all this evening. By the way, this first hour is sponsored by Janet Robert. She writes, "Happy Valentine's Day to Bill, the sweetest truth seeker in the world. Love, Janet." We'll be right back.
Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin. the end of love.
With Mike Malloy.
This hour is sponsored by Janet Robert, who writes Happy Valentine's Day to Bill, the sweetest truth seeker in the world. Love, Janet. Brad Friedman, who I've been telling you for years, is a very effective investigative journalist. He has bradblog.com, and we are lucky enough to have him as a substitute every now and again on this program. If you've not been to his website on a regular basis, shame on you. You should go there every single day and see what's happening. He has something posted. He posted it this morning at bradblog.com. You should check it out. But let me share a little bit with you. He writes, as I learned late last Thursday, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the most powerful right-wing lobbying group in the country, was revealed to have been working with their law firm and a number of private cybersecurity and intelligence firms to target progressive organizations, journalists, and citizens whom they felt were in opposition to their political activism, tactics, and points of view. As I went on the air Thursday night, my fifth in a six-day guest hosting stint on the Mike Malloy Show, revelations about the planned multi-million-dollar political hit job by the security-slash-intelligence firms working to develop a scheme for the U.S. Chamber were just beginning to come to light. Both plots were being developed by the Chamber and Bank of America by the very same law firm, Hunt & Williams, with which the cyber intelligence firms H.B. Gary Federal, Barrico Technologies, and Palantir Technologies. Jesus. As the show began, I was able to report the news based on an exclusive report from Li Fang at Think Progress that internal emails from one of the firms confirmed that VelvetRevolution.us, a progressive nonpartisan nonprofit organization co-founded by the Brad Blog and its StopTheChamber.com campaign, were specifically highlighted as targets of the Chamber's plot, which was proposed to include the planting of a false document in hopes they'd be publicly released by Velvet Revolution or other progressive groups, so the U.S. Chamber could then claim the groups involved had created forgery. It goes on, and then Brad writes, as Thursday's show continued, I received confirmation that I personally, along with members of my family, had been highlighted in this proposed hit job as Think Progress followed up with a second story based on several other emails from H.B. Gary's CEO Aaron Barr. The email focused on me, included names, personal information, home addresses, etc. of myself, family members, and a number of other members of Velvet Revolution. Naturally, I reported on the then-confirmed news in the second hour of that night's Malloy Show. An hour or so after the show went off the air Thursday night, the Brad Blog was no longer reachable as our server had been knocked offline hard, so I was unable to follow up with much more information. The server we use, which is also the home for many other progressive websites, was out of commission for nearly 24 hours, so I'm told by our server administrator that the very unusual outage was related to a serious hardware failure, which occurred at what was clearly a very inopportune moment. Moments before Friday's show, the Brad Blog was finally back up and online. Now, he goes on, and rather than continue to read what he has posted at his website, you should go to his website. Brad also wrote, for now, the revelation of terror tools used so brazenly against political opponents in the private corporate sector is disturbing, to say the least. And there's a lot there, and you should check it out. You know, the engagement has begun. I don't know if you're aware of it or not. I'm sure you are. Most of the people that listen to this program are highly aware that the cyber war has started, and it's going to be a drawn-out battle. It's going to be ongoing. This war, if you want to call it that, and I think that's an appropriate way to classify it, is a result of the attempts by the super wealthy in this country and their whores, like the Chamber of Commerce, no offense to sex workers, are determined, they are abso-goddamn-lutely determined to shut down any and all opposition to what they're about. I'm surprised, well, I don't know yet, maybe it'll turn out that my family members or this program has been targeted. If that day comes, it will come, and I will personally state right now, if it does come, and I have the means to track down the people who do it, there will be blood in the streets. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
Listening to America's Sweetheart, Mike Malloy. Every night I'm lying in bed, holding you close in my dreams, thinking about all the things that we said, and coming apart at the seams. We tried to talk it
25 before the hour. Yes, Valentine's Day, and this hour is sponsored by Janet. Her message, Happy Valentine's Day to Bill, the sweetest truth seeker in the world, love from Janet. Thanks, Janet, for the sponsorship. Oh, isn't that sweet? Email from Zan in Minneapolis. Zan writes, with all the hysteria over the Muslim Brotherhood, this piece of news struck me, and he has highlighted tear gas used on Iran protesters. You see, the Iranian government quickly declared Egypt a victory as if they had anything to do with it, reinforcing the idea that the Egyptian protesters were some kind of jihad. Yet the streets of Tehran again fill with protesters, and they are protesting the government that the Muslim Brotherhood is most compared to. One has to conclude that these protests in the Arab and Muslim world are not Islamist in any way. In fact, if you listen to Democracy Now!, they make it very clear that what happened in Egypt was a labor protest, not religious. They point out that the dock workers in Suez walked off the job, the factory shut down, and eventually doctors and lawyers took to the streets in Cairo, effectively shutting down the entire country. What we clearly saw in Egypt was a general strike. Admittedly, a little hard to notice, given that unions have little power in Egypt and didn't necessarily lead the revolt. But outside of Democracy Now!, this is not the way the press reports it in this country. If you want to understand why the right in this country has a hard time dealing with what they claim they want to happen in the Mideast, democracy, you need only have to understand one thing about Egypt. Labor won and the oligarchy lost. Vive la revolution! Someday it will come here. I fear what we will need to have happen to us in order to instigate it. By the way, The disappointment I feel upon learning that you are not doing your show is equaled by the joy of hearing Brad Friedman. Zan in Minneapolis. Yeah, it's amazing to me how, and I'm certainly not trying to sound condescending or patronizing or a know-it-all, but it's amazing to me how grossly most of the American media missed the point of that revolution. How many people did you hear when the violence and the protests and the nonviolence was still going on in the streets of Cairo and Alexandria, how many American commentators did you hear declare that part of the resistance to the government of Mubarak was in fact resistance to an American-backed dictator, someone that we had kept in power for three decades? And by we, I mean Democrat and Republican president and Congress. It was our money that supported him. It was our agreement that extended between Egypt, Israel, and the United States to maintain the status quo, to what I find interesting, let me just step out of this for a second. There were two countries in the Middle East that Israel has peace agreements with, and they're both dictatorships. Now, you can make the argument, if you want to, that they're all dictatorships. Not necessarily true. And now that the dictator in Egypt has been removed from power, and it looks like dictators and kings and tyrants in other countries in the Middle East and North Africa are also going to be removed from power, where does this leave the United States and Israel? But anyway, to trivialize or to try to reduce what happened in Egypt to an operation maintained, instigated and controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood is to demonstrate one's total stupidity. I understand that the crazy bastards over at the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast network have been trying to do just that, especially the psychotic son of a bitch, Glenn Beck, who insists that, oh, a caliphate is going to be established. Oh, watch out, good Christians. They're coming to rape your dogs and eat your children. I wish somebody would remove him from that program. Oh, my God. I wish somebody would just get his ass off the air, especially when you consider that the bobbleheads that listen to him and O'Reilly and Hannity and the rest of that stable of halfwits actually believe that, oh, the Muslims are coming. The Muslims are coming. Crazy bastards. The only way, Chris Hedges nails it, as he always does, but he points out that the only way opposition to the U.S.-backed regime of Mubarak could be expressed in the past three decades, though, was through Islamic movements. From the Muslim Brotherhood to more radical Islamic groups, some of which embrace violence, a new government in Egypt, which the army is promising, in order to maintain credibility with the Egyptian population, will have to more actively defy demands from Washington. I wonder if we're going to continue to provide the new government with hundreds of millions of dollars in foreign aid. What is it? $1.3 billion a year, most of which goes to the Egyptian military. It doesn't go to the people who desperately need it. It goes to the military. But a new government is going to have to be more openly antagonistic to Israel and more willing to actively defy demands from the United States. What is happening in Egypt, Chris writes, like what happened in Tunisia, tightens the noose that will, unless Israel and Washington radically change their policies toward the Palestinians and the Muslim world, will threaten to strangle the Jewish state, as well as dramatically curtail American influence in the Middle East. And as he usually does, Hedges points out the obvious stuff that we've talked about on this program. I'm sure you don't need this program or Chris Hedges to figure this out yourself, but the failure of the United States to halt the slow-motion ethnic cleansing, as Hedges puts it, of Palestinians by Israel has consequences. The failure to acknowledge the collective humiliation and anger felt by most Arabs because of the presence of U.S. troops on Muslim soil has consequences. The failure to denounce the repression, including the widespread use of torture, censorship, and rigged elections wielded by our allies against their citizens in the Middle East, has consequences. And we, the United States, we are soaked with the stench of these regimes. And Mubarak, as we talked about, well, when this was starting to develop a couple of weeks ago, Mubarak is seen by his people, or was seen by his people, as our puppet. Like so many of these regimes that we have propped up and defended and supported through huge appropriations of money and weaponry to their militaries in order to maintain what we consider to be the proper balance of power in the Middle East and other parts of the world. The people know, the Egyptians knew, he was a man who betrayed his own people and the Palestinians for money and for power. They know that. It's just your average dumbass American who doesn't know that. As Hedges says, the Muslim world does not see us as we see ourselves. Muslims are aware, while we are not, that we have murdered tens of thousands of Muslims in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. We have terrorized families, villages, and nations. We enable and defend the Israeli war crimes carried out against Palestinians and the Lebanese. Indeed, we give the Israelis the weapons and military aid to carry out the slaughter. We dismiss the thousands of dead as collateral damage. And then when those who are fighting against occupation kill us or kill Israelis, we condemn them, regardless of context, as terrorists. That's what we do. And I might add to what Hedges writes, not only do we condemn them as terrorists, but we scoop them up by the scores, by the hundreds, and we ship them off for torture. We ship them to places like Egypt and Syria. And Cambodia, for Christ's sake. We ship them off for torture and death. Some people never say the words, "I love you." Those who are fighting against occupation, when they kill us, or attempt to, or try to throw us out of their countries, the countries we've invaded, we label them as terrorists. Madness. Madness.
Yet tonight, how much he loves these people. It's more Mike Malloy. Even when you've been to give me comfort in the night, so I gotta help you.
It is 10 before the hour. I want to talk a little bit more about what's going on in Madison, Wisconsin, in the state of Wisconsin, in a moment. This hour has been sponsored by Janet Robert. Thanks, Janet. Her message: Happy Valentine's Day to Bill, the sweetest truth seeker in the world. Love, Janet. Aww. Mubarak is becoming history, or so it appears. As Chris Hedges said, he will soon become history. So will neighboring secular Arab regimes. Secular. The rise of powerful Islamic parties appears inevitable. It appears inevitable, not because of the Quran or a backward religious tradition, but because we in Israel believed we could bend the aspirations of the Arab world to our will through corruption and force. And isn't that the truth? Every time the U.S. unleashes another, or I should say the Obama administration, whoever's in charge, every time they unleash another drone missile attack in Afghanistan or Pakistan that kills innocent people, more young Muslims decide that jihad is the way to go. I expected and saw that kind of behavior for 8 years out of the Bush crime family. But Barack Hussein Obama? Really? Son of a bitch. He really had us fooled, didn't he? Oh, I know. Don't bother telling me about, well, he's got to deal with this, he's got to deal with that, and two steps back and one step forward. Hog snot. From the Associated Press, clashes between Iranian police and tens of thousands of protesters racked central Tehran on Monday as security forces beat and fired tear gas at opposition supporters hoping to evoke Egypt's recent popular uprising. Yeah, the Iranian government, the religious government of Iran, is not going to tolerate. I mean, they will do everything they can to beat, kill, murder, punish these young people. We're trying to overthrow this filthy, degenerate, right-wing government of Iran. And how did it get there? Because it was an attempt to overthrow the filthy, right-wing government of the Shah that the United States installed in 1953, 1954. The opposition in Iran called for a demonstration Monday in solidarity with Egypt's popular revolt. The rally is the first major show of strength for Iran's cowed opposition in more than a year. Police used tear gas against protesters in central Tehran's Revolution Square, as well as in other nearby main streets. Demonstrators responded by setting garbage bins on fire to protect themselves from the stinging white clouds. People were wounded, taken to hospital. Dozens were hospitalized because of severe wounds as a result of being beaten. Demonstrators chanted, "An Iranian dies but doesn't accept humiliation. Death to the dictator." That was directed at President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Security forces on motorcycles were chasing protesters through the streets, overtaking them and beating them into unconsciousness. The semi-official Fars news agency run by the government of Iran called protesters, quote, hypocrites, monarchists, ruffians, and seditionists, end quote, and ridiculed them for not chanting any slogans about Egypt as they had originally promised. See, this was supposed to be, oh, we're going to demonstrate in favor of our Muslim brothers in Egypt. The hell we are. We are going to demonstrate in favor of our own release from this tyranny. It doesn't always have to be a government supported, a dictator supported by the United States, although our involvement in that country's internal affairs to the point of overthrowing their duly elected government in 1953 is the reason this is happening now in 2011. Now, I realize for most Americans that's an impossible stretch. Son of a bitch, man, that's 64 years or 60 or something. Yeah, sure is. Police and militiamen poured into the streets of Tehran to challenge the marches, which officials worry could turn into demonstrations against Iran's ruling system. Well, the revolt in Iran is going to get an awful lot of support from Iranian Americans. It'll be very, very interesting to see how this plays out. Not as a spectator, because this is going to have a powerful and dramatic effect on you, Truth Seeker, and me, even though we are struggling just to make mortgage payments and pay the rent or keep the gas running in our cars now that we've had to move into our cars because our homes have been repossessed by this filthy, corrupt banking system enabled by the Obama administration now. So not as spectators are we going to witness this, but as people on the sidelines who are definitely going to be dragged into this. I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but there is a sense, there is a feeling of change that I can't seem to shake. How about you? We'll be back after the break. Stick around, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This hour is sponsored by Charles Miller. And he writes, on this heartfelt Valentine's Day, one ventricle to my sweet wife Chris, and one to my favorite sanity keepers, Mike and Kathy. May love and truth seeking light these dark, dark times. That's from Charles Miller. Charles, thanks. One ventricle to my sweet wife, Chris, and one to my favorite sanity keepers, Mike and Kathy. Thanks for the sponsorship, Charles. There is a call for assistance coming out from labor organizations in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin. There are rallies and meetings planned for tomorrow, Tuesday the 15th, and Wednesday the 16th in Madison at the state capitol. For those of you who live in Wisconsin and don't have a way to get to Madison, there are buses. The best way to find out about this is, I should have a website here. Damn it. I don't have a website here. If somebody has a website, will you send it to me and I'll get it out over the air here. This is emergency rally for state workers. The people are already in the streets, according to my emailer here, Betsy. They stormed the governor's office today, held off by police. Why talk about Egypt or budgets today or tomorrow? Wisconsin is the most progressive state until last November. Now we risk becoming the third or fourth Mississippi. Let me tell you something. The whole country is heading that way. Please help in the next few days. Everything else can wait. If this happens here, it's just a matter of time for the rest of the country. The ultimate corporate takeover. What she's talking about, the governor, the new right-wing governor, Scott Walker, has asked the state legislature to strip public employees in that state of their collective bargaining rights. Under his plan, park rangers, teachers, prison guards would no longer be able to fight back if the new Republican majority tries to slash their health benefits or pensions. That's not the most shocking part. It's this. The governor has also put the state National Guard on alert in case of, quote, labor unrest, end quote. This comes from Dan Grandone, who's a Wisconsin state director organizing for America. If you live in Wisconsin, even if you don't, you should be supporting this. Who was it that emailed me? Let me find it here. I think it was, Alice in Wisconsin, in Madison, writes, on Friday, the governor of Wisconsin proposed radical legislation that would completely or virtually eliminate collective bargaining for most public employees in the state. Among other things, the bill would, one, eliminate collective bargaining for University of Wisconsin staff and faculty, University of Wisconsin hospitals and clinics staff, home health care workers and child care providers, and two, limit collective bargaining for most state, county, and municipal employees, including teachers, to only wages, which could not exceed the amount equivalent to the change in the consumer price index. Alice goes on, this bill was introduced as a budget repair bill, and it does contain some strategies for addressing some but not all of the current state budget shortfall. However, its primary goal appears to be an attack on public workers. The governor has even put the National Guard on notice in case state employees do any kind of work action. His example for using the National Guard was prison guards not showing up for work. The American Federation of Teachers in Wisconsin, their website has information. That's AFT, American Federation of Teachers, AFT-Wisconsin.gov. You can get this information online if you want it. And as James in Seattle points out, regarding the governor of Wisconsin's attack on unions, the first action Hitler took after ascending to elective office in pre-war Germany was to outlaw the unions. Then he began implementing the Third Reich. I don't know. I know that on March 19th, I know where I will be. I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. at an anti-war. That's how it's starting out, as an anti-war protest event. I don't know how it's going to end up, but I will be there. I may be lucky enough to be one of the speakers. I'm not sure. But I hope you're going to be there. March the 19th, I realized there's something going on that weekend in New York City also. Roll the dice, take your pick, whatever you want to do. But I hope you do something. I hope you do something. You know, in watching, and reading about the action that occurred in Egypt, it just drives home the reality that people will only put up with so much until they finally decide, okay, we've had it. In this particular case, this was organized, as it so often is, by young people. It was a coordinated organizational effort that tied into like-minded groups in over a 3 or 4 year period in Tunisia and Egypt And apparently in Iran and other countries around North Africa and the Middle East, countries that are people within those countries, mostly young people, who are simply not, they are not going to live the kind of life that one lives under dictatorship, no matter who sponsors a dictatorship. A, B, they're also not, I repeat, not going to live the kind of life imposed by religious fanatics. They simply are not. I think people around the earth, I don't care what culture, I don't care what country, I don't care what nationality or language is spoken, people understand without even knowing that, a French philosopher said a long time ago that people will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. And that is so true. It doesn't make any difference what the religion is or what the form of tyranny of government is. You know, we could change that. In the United States, citizenry will never get the truth from media until the last liar on the Fox propaganda network is strangled with the entrails of the last liar on right-wing talk radio. I like that. I like that. I know who I'd like to see be strangled first. For people in our country to continue, remember this, the salient fact, the income disparity in Egypt was less than the income disparity in this country. And I continue to be amazed at how willing the American people are to be constantly kicked in the ass. I mean, just over and over again. Don't you understand what is going on? I mean, if you don't, shame on you. You should understand it. I don't care what your political affiliation is. I don't give a goddamn what you believe. And if you believe, you know, if you believe in religion, if you want to worship a chair every morning, I don't care. If you think your reward is going to come after you're dead, okay, go ahead and think that. But that's stupidity and it's asininity. How much longer before the American people say, and I'm talking about young people, how much longer before you young people say, okay, that's enough, and react? What is it going to take to get you to goddamn react? What?
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him kissable. It's More Mike Malloy.
This hour is sponsored by Charles Miller. He has a message on this heartfelt Valentine's Day. One ventricle to my sweet wife, Chris. And one to my favorite sanity keepers, Mike and Kathy. May love and truth-seeking light these dark, dark times. I hope so. I hope something does. Dick Cheney gave Rumsfeld an award at the CPAC convention. I guess you read about that. And James reminds us, James and Seattle, while Vice President Joe Biden recently claimed that Mubarak of Egypt wasn't a dictator. Biden also said that Assange of WikiLeaks was a high-tech terrorist. Oh, Jesus, God. What else do we have? All right, let me share this with you. This is from Maine Coyote. Coyote. On this special day of love, hearts, flowers, sweetness, and light, Mike, let me fill you in on some of the sweeter moments you missed while you were away. Of course, you know the Egyptian dictator Mubarak fled to the coast, and the love may be spreading to other Middle Eastern dictatorships that are teetering on the precipice of a power shift, including Yemen, Bahrain, and Iran. Gives one hope that it could even happen here. Seven Tea Partiers, as well as some Republicans, joined the Democrats in the House for a vote against extending three specific provisions of the Patriot Act, including wiretapping without warrants. The extension failed to pass on the fast track that Republican leaders believed they had the necessary two-thirds vote for, so they'll be voting again. Could this possibly indicate a sizable rift in the GOP rank and file? Also, last week, Dick Cheney was heckled by the flying monkey right at the CPAC convention. And Cheney was called what he is, a war criminal. Couldn't have said it better myself. In another one bites the dust moment, New York Representative Christopher Lee resigns after being outed by the recipient of his shirtless photo. I saw that on Craigslist. Even though it was not as creative as Brett Favre's email photo, at least it had a positive outcome. Gabrielle Giffords continues to improve in rehab. At a midweek luncheon, Obama strongly urged CEOs and other corporatists to invest in America. Of course, it probably won't happen, but he took the correct message to the right audience rather than just preaching to the choir. And finally, Maine's new fiscally conservative Tea Party-backed governor has released his budget. At first blush, Governor LePage's proposed state budget has happily surprised many as being far more moderate than expected, likely in order to gain bipartisan support. It's too easy to celebrate yet, however, as the real impacts are not entirely clear. And so on and so on. Happy Valentine's Day from Kathy in Maine. Several people sent me synopses like that. I really wasn't off the planet, guys and girls, but thank you. Obama. Boy, has he turned out to be a pisser, huh? We were sitting in the airport in Florida on the way back, and I had a copy of New York Times, and I started reading this article on the front page and just about lost it, and handed it over to Kathy after I read it. And she sat there and read it, and we're waiting for the flight to be called, and she looked at me and said, "What in the hell is he doing?" What we're talking about is the Obama administration's report on redesigning the government's role in housing finance. Is not just a proposal to dissolve the finance companies Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I don't know how it's been reported here recently, but Obama has a more audacious call for the federal government to cut back its broadly popular, long-running campaign to help Americans own homes. The three ideas that the report outlines for replacing Freddie and Fannie would raise the cost of mortgage loans and push home ownership beyond the reach of a huge chunk of American families. That fact is already generating opposition in Congress and among groups like community banks and consumer advocates. But Obama administration officials said they had concluded the country could no longer afford to sustain its commitment to minting homeowners. Better to help some people rent. There's more here. We'll talk about it when we come back. This is pretty astonishing stuff from the so-called progressive. We had debates on the progressive cruise about whether or not Barack Obama was a progressive. He's no more of a progressive than I think Glenn Beck is a real American. We'll be right back. I won't. I hear
man conservatives love to snuggle. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So the Obama administration is talking about cutting off aid to people who want to buy a house. Let me give you an example here. According to the Times, federal programs subsidized 9 in 10 mortgage loans made last year. 90% have some kind of federal subsidizing. If the Obama administration succeeds, that could plummet to 1 in 10 loans by the end of the decade. You understand this? The report put together for the Obama administration, the report said, quote, the government must help to ensure that all Americans have access to quality housing that they can afford. This does not mean our goal is for all Americans to be homeowners, end quote. And then the Times goes on, in announcing its blueprint, the administration offered a series of options for lawmakers to consider. But as a starting point, its ideas pleased and surprised business interests and advocates of smaller government that have long opposed the government's presence in the mortgage market. Yeah, they don't want you owning a home. They want you living in a goddamn mud shack somewhere. You know, we went to a couple of places, or went to one place over this past week where people were living in shipping crates. You know those great big, they look like boxcars. You see them go by on trains hauling all that garbage crap from China. You know what I'm talking about. It looked like the semi-trailers. Well, we went by a port where those shipping containers, I guess they get to the point where, like everything else, they fall apart. And the natives in this area where we were wind up with them and live in the goddamn things. How's that? Okay? So that's what they're aiming for in this country. Home ownership? What are you talking about? What the Obama administration wants, apparently, is for people to rent and not buy. The Times says the Obama administration plans to put Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac out of business by gradually reducing the value of loans they can guarantee and raising the prices they charge lenders. It also plans to require larger down payments from borrowers. The Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner said last Friday, the Brookings Institution, that the health of the housing market would dictate the rate of the agency's closing. He estimated the process could take 5 to 7 years to get rid of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. If those two companies disappear, investors will demand that borrowers pay higher interest rates. But there's a wide-ranging disagreement about how much higher. Half a percentage point, several percentage points. Give me a break. Whatever the upper limit is, these sons of bitches in the banking and mortgage lending industry will push it even higher. You know that as well as I do. Investors also may be reluctant to provide money for 30-year fixed-rate mortgages, a product that has never existed without government support. So if you're like 22 right now and you're thinking, well, in another 5 or 6 years I'm going to buy a house, forget about it. No, you're not. Not unless you meet certain criteria. The report sketches three options without offering specifics or picking a favorite. The first option would eliminate any government guarantee for middle-class mortgages. Gone. That includes Veterans Administration. Under the second option, the government would offer guarantees to investors, mostly in times of financial distress, preserving a steady supply of loans but not reducing interest rates in good times. And the third option, the government would still guarantee a broad range of mortgages, but only if lenders first purchase a guarantee from a private insurer. That would limit the government's exposure, but also the effect on interest rates. The report prepared by Treasury and the Department of Housing and Urban Development also notes that policies like allowing homeowners to deduct mortgage interest payments from taxable income encourages people to invest in housing rather than other parts of the economy, and that should be gotten rid of. Can you believe that? This is coming from a, well, no, this is very understandable. It's coming from a Democratic president, Barack Obama. When you hear people like Ralph Nader 10, 15 years ago talking about the lack of difference between these two political parties, and you thought he was kidding, here you are. So instead of fixing the lending business where it needs to be fixed, and that's with the predatory lenders and with these sons of bitches in the banking and financial services industry that are destroying America, instead of doing that, let's do this. Let's make it impossible for Americans to buy houses, or damn near impossible. Let's say to Americans, okay, the idea of putting 10 or 20% down on your house, forget about it. Now it's going to cost you 40 or 50%. A, B, you think your 6 or 7% mortgage loan interest rate was high a couple of years ago. Wait till this new system gets into place. It's going to be like in the bad old days of Ronald Reagan when interest rates were up around 16, 17, 18%. Barack Obama is assisting, along with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, in destroying the country. You do understand that, don't you, Truth Seeker? You don't get that yet? You don't get it? Okay. You don't get that. Okay. Well, then somebody tell me what the hell he is doing. What else? The Obama budget, the most glaring cuts were not to a bloated defense budget, but to entitlement programs that both parties say need a reform. Now, remember, Obama's a former community organizer in Chicago, and he's proposing a 50% cut to the $700 million Community Services Block Grant Program. A former lawyer, Obama, who touted his work to improve living conditions for the poor, Obama proposed a sharp cut in energy assistance for low-income families. Freeze to death, you bastards. Just freeze to death. The oil companies are making billions upon billions of dollars of profit. You can't afford your home heating bill. Screw you. Freeze to death. Obama is proposing refiguring loan programs so that students would start accruing interest on their student loans even as they're enrolled in school. You miserable son of a bitch! It just goes on and on. Who's taking it in the neck here? Young people, students. Because apparently corporate America, of which Barack Obama is a fierce advocate for, corporate America does not want an educated class. They want a worker class. They want a drone class. They don't want smart workers. Oh, Jesus. Pell Grants. Did you hear about this? Did you hear what the Obama administration wants to do with Pell Grants? Bam-bam-bam-bam-bam. This, according to the Associated Press, President Barack Obama's budget plan would cut $100 billion from Pell Grants and other higher education programs over a decade through belt tightening and use the savings to keep the maximum college financial aid award at $5,000. You try to send a kid to school lately? You think $5,000 a year? Do you know what that gets you? On university level, nothing. That might pay for the goddamn books. The first proposal, there's a couple of proposals. The first would end the year-round Pell policy that lets students collect two grants in a calendar year, with the second grant used for summer school. Gone. The second proposal would reduce loan subsidies for graduate and professional students. That would free $2 billion next year and save $29 billion over 10 years. I can't get my mind around what this Democratic president is trying to do. Make Pell Grants almost meaningless. Let kids who are struggling in school, who have seen their tuition skyrocket, let them continue, since parents can't afford to help anymore in very few instances. So put the kids in debt. And here's a give back to the banking industry, or whoever finances the debt. We'll let you start charging these high school graduates, you know, 19, 18-year-olds that are in college. You can start charging them interest as soon as they get the money to pay their tuition. If they're going to law school or medical school or engineering school, they're not going to graduate for years. But you predatory, blood-sucking sons of bitches can start charging interest as soon as the kid takes the loan. This is from a Democratic president. Do you understand that?
You give your
a conservative today. Pucker up, it's more Mike Malloy.
Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
10 before the hour, and again, the hour is sponsored by Charles Miller. He writes, on this heart-filled Valentine's Day, one ventricle to my sweet wife, Chris, and one to my favorite sanity keepers, Mike and Kathy. May love and truth-seeking light these dark, dark times. Another thing, the Obama budget will cut $1 billion from airport grants, $1 billion from grants to states for water treatment plants and similar projects. Public health will be cut. Forestry programs will be cut. Home energy assistance, low-income families, community service block grants will be cut in half. An initiative to restore the Great Lakes environmental health will be reduced by a quarter. I mean, it's just, I cannot understand what is going on here in the context of Barack Obama being, to any degree, a progressive politician. He is not. You do understand that now, do you not? There was a lot of debate on the Progressive Voices cruise about this amongst those of us who were the designated speakers. And, of course, my position, and it was not one that was readily accepted by other people on the panel, my position is that Barack Obama is anything but a progressive. I don't know what he is. Call him anything you want. Republican light, a corporatist, a go-along, get-along. I don't know what the hell he is. The EPA is to be cut. Public broadcasting is to be cut. I mean, I can't understand why. And then you have a freak nut job, a complete insane jerk-ass like Michelle Bachmann at that CPAC circle jerk over the weekend saying, Barack Obama has brought socialism to the United States. You know, and you listen to that, and then you hear the trolls out in the audience going, yeah, yeah, he has. Yeah, yeah. Clap, clap, applaud, applaud. Yeah, yeah, he has. You know, and you just wonder, what the hell? What is that CPAC thing? What is that? Is that a funnel into the gut of some interstellar monster who just hovers above the earth? And it's just astonishing. Astonishing, isn't it? President Obama has brought socialism to the United States of America. Oh my God. Oh, hey, another Glenn Beck follower goes berserk. Did you hear about this? This was a few months back. A leader of an anti-illegal immigrant group was convicted yesterday in a home evasion robbery that left a 9-year-old girl dead and her father dead in what prosecutors said was an attempt to steal money to fund this white people psycho group's operation. A Tucson, Arizona jury found Shauna Ford, a woman, 42, guilty of murder in the killings of Raul Flores, 29, and his daughter, Brisenia, at their home in Aravaca, a desert community 10 miles north of Mexico. The jury deliberated for 7 hours over 2 days. The woman was convicted on 2 counts of first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder for the shooting of Flores' wife, and related aggravated assault and robbery counts. The jury will return to court on Tuesday to decide if the death penalty should be considered. This woman is the leader of a group called the Minutemen American Defense, a border watch group. Prosecutors argued that she planned the attack to help fund this group of Glenn Beck-sucking psychopaths' operations. Authorities said the woman and 2 men dressed as law enforcement officers forced their way into Flores' home, then shot him, shot his daughter, and shot his wife. The wife survived. A 911 recording released by the Pima County Sheriff's Office captured the woman, the wife, pleading for help after her husband and daughter were shot. She was heard crying out in pain from a gunshot wound and becoming frantic as the attackers returned. The sound of 9 gunshots was heard as Ms. Gonzalez, the victim, engaged the intruders. She said on the recording, "Oh my God, I can't believe they killed my family." So another Glenn Beck-sucking freak right-wing. This one has been convicted, though. The Minuteman. What is it? The Minuteman American Defense. They break into a home to steal, to loot, to cheat these white people. They break into a Mexican-American's house, kill the 9-year-old little girl, kill the husband, try to kill the wife. And I bet they all went home and broke out their Bibles and had a prayer meeting, thanking God for all the good work that they had done that day. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back after the top of the hour. Again, thanks to Charles Miller, who sponsored this hour. And he wrote, "On this heart-filled Valentine's Day, one ventricle to my sweet life wife, Chris, and one to my favorite sandy keepers, Mike and Kathy." Thank you, Charles. We appreciate it. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Time, I'm gone.
Happy Valentine's Day. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. This hour is sponsored by Robin Horton. The message is sponsored by Robin Horton and Seattle's Puget Sound Peace Presence. We must become our own media, Robin writes, our own self-educators, our own agents of positive change. Please visit CI activist. That always gets me, Robin. CIactivist.org. CIactivist.org. The first day in activist being the last letter, first letter in activist being the first letter. Never mind. First letter in activist being the last letter in CIA. Thanks, Robin. The House today voted to reauthorize and extend through December 8th three ways in which Congress expanded the FBI's counterterrorism powers after the attacks September 11th, 2001. Last week, an effort to extend these provisions of the so-called Patriot Act failed to pass after falling just short of the two-thirds majority needed under a special rule on Monday today. On Monday, the bill was able to pass with only a simple majority, and it did. The vote was 275 to 144 to reauthorize spying on your un-American ass. The provisions allow investigators to get, quote, roving wiretap, end quote, court orders, allowing them to follow, quote, terrorism suspects, unquote, who switch phone numbers or providers. It also allows them to get orders allowing them to seize, quote, any tangible things, end quote, relevant to a security investigation, like a business's customer records. And to get national security wiretap orders against non-citizen suspects who are not connected to any foreign power. During the debate today, most Republicans argued in favor of the bill. That's because they're all cowardly, snaky sons of bitches. While most Democrats criticized it, still, the debate did not break down entirely along partisan lines. 65 Democrats voted for it, including Representative C.A. Dutch Ruppersberger of Maryland, the ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee, who argued that he thought it would be better to go even further and extend the provisions through 2013, as the Obama administration wants to do. And 27 Republicans voted against it, including Representative Dana Rohrabacher, Republican of California, who said the American people had, quote, a legitimate fear of out-of-control prosecutors and out-of-control spy networks, end quote. It is likely the Senate will approve the House's bill, putting off a larger debate until later in the year. Yeah, they always put it off, don't they? And Arianna Huffington sells out to AOL. You know, the AOL purchase of Huffington Post. What was it? Arianna got $11 million profit out of that. It went for $315 million. Kathy, are you going to get any of that for all the articles you contributed to Huffington Post? Do any of the writers... You know, Arianna Huffington, there's another goddamn example. Let me tell you something. I'll tell you a little stuff here. Back when Air America was being put together by Shelley Drobny and Anita Drobny and a couple other people who were trying desperately to find backers, and I think John Sint was involved in this also, they went to a meeting in Arianna Huffington's house and practically begged her to put up a few bucks to start Air America, which she absolutely refused to do. What? She did not put up any money. No, no, Kathy, no, she did not. Oh, yeah? Well, that's not the way I heard the story. I'm going to go with the way I heard the story from the Drobnys. Well, yeah, I just am. If somebody wants to challenge me on it, let them go right ahead. But Arianna Huffington, who was an absolute right winger until she decided she could make money by becoming a liberal and opening up something called the Huffington Post and getting all this free stuff written for her publication to the point where AOL finally took a look at it and said, oh my God, you realize how many people are visiting? Let's buy it. I hate these people. I hate them. Just, I cannot stand these fake liberals. They're on television. They're at the Huffington Post. Not too much longer, though, because AOL's editorial policy is right of center, in some instances hard right of center. Arianna Huffington, Kathy, may have provided a couple of names for what? Open up your mic and talk if you know something. Say something.
Well, what we just heard.
I can't hear you.
The story we just heard on this cruise was that Arianna Huffington was most generous in starting funding for Air America in as much as she hosted several large fundraisers and was instrumental in raising money in the early days.
She held some fundraisers,
yes.
Yeah.
And without her assistance, the network never would have launched.
Well.
Now, since then, she may have done a 180 or changed her priorities, but in the early days, now we were not present past the Shelley and Anita Drobny early phase, and then about 6 months later, we jumped back in. But we're talking about some formative days, and I know the former vice president or president of Air America said that without Arianna Huffington's influence and bringing her moneyed friends to the table, there would have been no Air America.
Okay, so in the interest of fairness, there you have two points of view. You have Catherine's and mine. I must have been out of the room when that statement was made.
You were actually on the stage, but
I wasn't listening.
Not paying attention to.
I may not
have
been paying attention.
Hal Sparks make balloon animals or something.
Well, I'll tell you what. That's the beauty of the Malloy program. You can hear two points of view. I'm going to go with what I know to be facts. And you go with what you need that you know to be facts, and we'll find out. I'll tell you what we'll do. That'll be your assignment tomorrow, Miss Producer. Why don't you call John and ask him?
Well, Mr. Talk Show Host, I don't need to call John because I heard John form words with his mouth. Not
no,
four
I think
days
you
ago.
Misheard him. I think you
no,
totally.
No, I'm really pretty fairly certain I did not.
Well, I'm going to say, all right, but like I said, I'm going to stick with my version, and that is Arianna Huffington, who started out as an arch conservative, tried to push her poor little gay husband into being a representative from their home district until finally he just shrieked and came out of the closet where he was deeply ensconced and became a very happy man once he did that. And Arianna was left to drift into the world of the predatory world of media and set up the Huffington Post. And now she sold it for $314 million, I think, to AOL, out of which she personally pockets $14 or $15 million. I just wanted to know, Kathy, if you were going to get paid for all the articles that you contributed to Huffington Post now, free of charge, in order for Arianna to cash out and make all this money. That's my basic question. And as far as her contributing to Air America, no, I'm sorry. She did not. Huh? Okay. Okay. we'll find out tomorrow when we get a call from her lawyer or something, right? All right. We have a break coming. I'll tell you what, when we come back, we're going to take some phone calls. The number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to check in with your humble and obedient servant here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. We'll be right back. The hour. Yeah, Valentine's Day stuff here. This hour is sponsored by Robin Horden, who is with the Seattle's Puget Sound Peace Presence. And Robin writes, "We must become our own media, our own self-educators, our own agents of positive change. Please visit ciactivist.org. ciactivist.org. Okay, as promised, some phone calls. Ann is in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic.
Hi. I heard you mention a week or so before you took off on the cruise that there were going to be some stations that cut back.
Mm-hmm.
On your broadcast, and mm-hmm. I thought, well, that's not going to happen in Madison. For God's sake, we've had enough descend on us with Squirt Walker. But listening to the commercials this evening, apparently Alan Colmes will be barging in at 9 o'clock, the second hour of the program. And I just want to convey the message in one of his promos, that is, the American people are happy that Barack Obama is extending a hand to the Republicans, because people don't want to see mommy and daddy fighting. My God, is that what we get in place of you?
Is
such an insult. I mean, we feel so beleaguered in Madison as it is.
Yeah, well,
what are they thinking?
Well, it's no different in Madison than it is in any city in the country where the right wing has taken complete control of your state. That affects your media also. You know, I've been talking about this for months. There is no question about what's going on. Little by little, one step at a time, one television network, one radio station, one radio program at a time, the voices from the progressive left are being eliminated. That's just a fact. Anyone who denies that is either crazy, or works for corporate America. It's happening. Alan Colmes is Alan Colmes. If the management at the Mic in Madison has decided that he will fit into their lineup, better than I will, okay. You know, there's nothing I or you can do about it, Ann. Absolutely nothing.
Well, Kathy said that she thought that they would put you on delayed broadcast.
Oh, yeah, they may do it. I mean, I'm sure they'll give me a choice. We're going to take away your live program and stick Alan Colmes in here. Do you want to come on as a delayed recorded broadcast? I don't know yet. I'm still thinking about it. We're still trying to decide what to do. You know, I've gone through this before.
Yes, I know that you've been on delayed before, and it's been wonderful when you are live in our market.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, that's also
for those people like me who aren't online to hear what Chris Hedges has had to say for the day about events. Prairie mm-hmm. 2. This is an enormous source of information. And I can't thank you enough for bringing that to us.
Well,
and this truth star oligarchy that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it just comes as bad news. I suppose the bad news will keep coming, although I have to say that I felt that that peaceful protest in Cairo and throughout Egypt gave me hope that maybe we can start saying our no. I think it's going to reverberate in the Middle East first, but finally maybe we can say our no,
mm-hmm.
forcefully, peaceably, and get the message through. But I hate to lose your voice, even if it's on delay, so I kind of beg you, stay with us. We need you.
Well, I'd love to, but Anne, you know, I don't make these decisions. You know, this program is available to 1,000 radio stations in this country. Do you know how many radio stations take it? About 20.
Oh, no.
And the reason for that is because what I have to say and the way I say it is just a little bit too threatening for certain markets or at least for the management of certain radio stations. It's too threatening. It's too outside the parameters of what liberals are supposed to say. And for that reason, our universe is shrinking more and more and more. That's just the way it goes. And I have to leave it there. Thanks for your concern. I do appreciate it, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right,
thank you so much.
All right, Anne, take care.
Keep the stars and the sun for I live.
Seekers, fall in love all over again with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Tim is in Detroit listening on XM.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tim.
Well, regarding the whole Arianna Huffington controversy, I think what we have to understand as leftists and progressives is that we can't rely on capitalists to fund our movement. They're fundamentally against it. I mean, sometimes some of the Arianna types may come out and kind of make liberal noises, but ultimately they're interested in one thing, and that's capital. All they care about is the perpetuation of the capitalist class. I mean, I know a lot of Americans aren't that well educated about class economics, but that's what it boils down to. And we as progressives and our leftists, we have to unify pretty much from the ground up. We have to create our own media. We have to create our own movements. We have to work inside labor unions. We have to organize strikes. We have to organize protests. We have to do it all ourselves. We can't rely on somebody from on high to kind of ascend downward and you know, give us money. It's not going to happen. And
no, that's not my point, and it never has been. My point is simply this. The right wing in this country, with all their millionaires and billionaires, decided after the defeat of Barry Goldwater, who was so soundly defeated by Lyndon Johnson back in 64, that they would never let that happen again. And what they would do, in fact, would be to build an infrastructure, political infrastructure, that consisted of so-called think tanks and media organizations and speakers bureaus and all sorts of activities that took lots of money. The left in this country has never done that. The left, the only organization that the left has ever had up until recently has been labor unions. Labor unions now represent 8% of the workforce, and most of those are public employee unions that are about to be busted into a million pieces by these new Republican governors. So, no, I don't expect rich liberals to, I don't expect that, to wait for money to drop from the heaven that's occupied by rich liberals. My point is simply this, that wealthy people who claim to be liberal or progressive, who sit back on their asses, while their counterparts on the right wing contributed millions upon millions of dollars to establish an infrastructure, those liberals and progressives ought to sit their asses down and shut up, because they have nothing to say. Arianna Huffington is one of them, as far as I'm concerned. She has nothing to say about the progressive movement in this country, nor do any wealthy liberals or left-wingers, and they do exist. There are scores of them who have not contributed, who have not busted their asses to make sure that the progressive or liberal message gets out. I have less respect for them than I have for the right-wingers who have contributed money. So, while I agree with you, sure, it takes organization, but this is the United States of America, capitalist America in the year 2011. And for the past 30 years, if you haven't had money, to organize, to set up institutions, to set up this, to set up that, you've been outplayed. And that's exactly what's happened in this country. So that's what I meant by that. I don't expect people to reach down from heaven and hand me money, but I do expect.
I guess the way I look at it, and I don't know if it's getting into quote unquote conspiracy or not, but I see a lot of rich liberals, and I guess I look at it from a class perspective, that even if they, in the past or today, talk about progressive causes, because of their very station in the capitalist class, they're going to by definition unify with right wingers.
Well, that's probably true. I'm sure that it is true. Then I think it's up to whoever writes the dictionary on who's a liberal and who's a progressive and who's a conservative, who's a neo-Nazi, to stop referring to people on the left who self-identify as being on the left. Oh yeah, I'm a liberal, political liberal. Stop referring to them, and as you said, stop waiting for them to assist. But my point is simply that those on the so-called elite left who have claimed to be liberals or claimed to be progressives have never, ever, ever put their money where their mouths are. And they ought to sit down and shut up and get out of the way. That's all. Just get out of the way.
Mike, about the only example I can think of a capitalist assisting a leftist is Frederick Engels. And I've never been able to kind of do research very much on what Frederick Engels did as a businessman. I mean, I've read in several accounts of Karl Marx that he supposedly got supported, at least in terms of room and board, by Engels. But in terms, and I think he helped him publish Das Kapital. But I'm not sure, how much of that support, how far it went. In other words, maybe Engels supported Marx to some extent. But as I understand European history regarding the left movement, a lot of it was based pretty much among the middle class. Mm-hmm. And, like for example, the anarchist movement in Switzerland, that was often organized by middle class watchmakers. And obviously, you never had a leftist take over in Switzerland. But I guess my point is that the left where it has succeeded in the world has been kind of driven by pretty much the middle class, who are well educated in one form or another. And somehow we're going to have to do that in the United States. So the trouble is, the U.S. doesn't seem to have that much of a strong leftist history. It seems to be more of a kind of a hodgepodge of things. Often co-opted by the right wing in the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. Revolution or progressive change always comes out of the middle class. I don't expect wealthy people to assist in any damn thing except their own self-gratification. On the other hand, I'm starting to repeat myself here. If somebody declares themselves to be a liberal, just like somebody declares himself to be a conservative, and they have assets, and it's obvious what is needed. I mean, this war has been going on in this country and on a real serious level for the past 30 years. And during that time, the liberal left has done nothing, absolutely nothing, nothing to except in a few instances where individuals have declared their liberal point of view and then gotten involved in self-aggrandizement or building their own wealth from their image as a liberal. And I'm talking mostly about people on television or radio who have done this. But the absolute needs of the liberal left in this country, the political left in this country, you know, what do we usually have to do? We have to wind up holding bake sales or selling buttons or banners or crap just to raise money to go to a demonstration someplace. So the liberal left in this country, especially the wealthy liberals, can kiss my ass. And I'm serious. You know, I've had enough. I've had enough of them. They're disgusting. They are counter-revolutionaries. They are worse than the right wing because they present a face of, oh, yeah, I'm a liberal. No, you're not, because you have never put your money where your mouth is. And, you know, I have felt
We have to look at people like the late Mario Savio, people like that. We have to look at Gandhi, obviously, Martin Luther King. We have to kind of go back to those old models where people kind of built themselves from the ground up, you know, because I think that's what worked. I mean, I don't know the history of the civil rights movement in terms of its funding, but I'm sure a lot of it just came from ordinary people.
Yeah, for real. Listen, Tim, I got to leave it there. Thanks, man.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Derek is in New Mexico listening to Sirius. Hello, Derek.
Hey, Mike. I got to tell you something. I cringe every time you and Kathy have a differing opinion.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know. I just start cringing.
Was it like mom and dad arguing?
Yeah, I'm ready to go run to the bedroom.
Okay, well, I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, it's fine.
we just have a big difference of opinion on that particular issue.
Well, I'm glad to see that you guys are still.
Oh yeah, well, it's Valentine's Day. We, you know, we'll kiss.
You have to be, right?
Yeah, we'll
kiss
and make up, right?
First of all, I guess Blue is right. Obama is a fraud. First thing.
Only it's not Blue that says that. A lot of us right here in this country say it. But I get your point.
I got to be honest with you, I'm just really getting tired of these excuses made by, you know, over and over again. I don't want to mention any names of some of the other talk show hosts, but it just seems like whatever he's doing, they're just trying to figure out another way to make an excuse for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or it's a big plan. You know, it's in the big plan, the big picture. You know. So, and I wanted to ask you, what do you think of Donald Trump? He is extremely pro-union. I was a union steward in Las Vegas, and also I own my own bar, and we unionized my own bar, so I actually took it to the third level, you know, when I got my own business. If I really wasn't going to be a hypocrite, I decided, well, I should unionize.
Right.
Of course, it's not up to me, it's up to the employees, but I encouraged it. But, you know, he's operated these hotels and Local 54 out there, the Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees Union. They have nothing but good things to say about the guy. He's had as many as 15 unions under you know, his casinos.
Mm-hmm.
He filed bankruptcy. He could have destroyed the contracts. He never did. And I think he's saying the right things. And, of course, a lot of people on the left are attacking him, and Fox TV on the right is attacking him.
I have no knowledge whatsoever of Trump's pro-union activities until you just said it. I find that surprising.
Well, you're not pro-union activities, but, you know, I worked for Michelin Reckless on the Riviera Hotel. He filed bankruptcy hundreds of times, but one thing he never did is he never messed with the union, and we never had a strike in the history of the hotel since 1954.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, he always got along with labor.
Yeah. Well, Donald Trump, as far as I'm concerned, is what he is. He's an egomaniac. I don't know what he was doing at the Conservative Political Action convocation, you know, where a bunch of half-wit maniacs sit around and talk about how they're going to destroy America. I think Trump is a hustler. I think he's represents probably some of the worst aspects. Hold on. Just
sure, yeah.
Hold on.
They go together like a horse and carriage. This I'll tell you.
10 before the hour, and this hour has been sponsored by Robin Horton. He is with the Puget Sound Peace Presence. And he advocates we become our own media, our own self-educators, our own agents of positive change. Visit the site ciactivists.org and see what Robin has written about. Right, we were talking with Derek, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what, where were we? Just about...
We're talking about Donald Trump's ego, and I think, well, so what? He has a big ego, but...
Well, it's not, it's toxic narcissism. He's on that same level as a Glenn Beck or a Rush Limbaugh. Now, again, I have no idea of his interaction with unions. If he has been, amenable to having unions in his many, many enterprises, maybe it's because he has never opened an enterprise in a right-to-work state. A, B, he was afraid of taking a union on. He didn't do it as because he's pro-union or pro-working class. I mean, isn't Trump to Trump the working class are a bunch of fools? The only way he wants to deal with them is in his casinos. You look at what he develops. That's not for working class. That's not for middle class.
Well, he wants to step on China. He wants to bring the tariffs on Chinese goods, and he wants American-made products. He's tired of having Chinese glass in his hotels.
Well, I can agree with that. But, again, what's his motivation? Is it because he's more interested in rebuilding the middle class in this country, or is it because he's interested in getting cheaper glass for his hotel? I don't know, Derek.
Well, you know, I think
instinctively don't like him. You know what I'm saying?
I
just don't like him. Everything about him, the way he combs his hair, the way his lips purse up, the way he the way he does it, you know, the way he marries teenage girls, you know, he sucks. I don't like him. I'm sorry.
But I got to think, what other options do we have?
Well, okay. I mean, what are you saying?
I can't stomach Obama for another 4 years. And I don't think the Republicans are coming up with any ideas the same old thing.
Well, let's hope that there is a somebody out there who is of a higher intellect and a higher political understanding than Donald Trump. I mean, again, I don't know. Maybe he's got a PhD in political science. I have no idea. But every time I've heard him open his mouth, he just sounds like a rich, egomaniacal, self-referential jackass to me. Whatever.
But he is his own man, and I think he's
well. No, he's
not.
What do you mean his own man? He works in conjunction with banks. He gets so deep into the banks that they can't afford. You know, if that were you or me, I'll tell you what: get behind on your house payment. See what the banks do to you. But when you have billions of dollars in debt, like Trump does, then you become partners with the bank. The last thing they're going to do is kick your ass to the curb, which is obviously where he belongs. Well, I shouldn't say obviously, but in my opinion, I don't like him. I just don't like him, Derek. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right, man. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in, though. I really do. Thank you, Derek. It's just a gut reaction, a visceral reaction, you know? Donald Trump may be wonderful. He may be the person to lead us out of... What am I saying? Roger is in L.A. Hello, Roger.
Hey, Mike. No, I don't think any of them will win. I heard the last I heard was Obama, you know, the C's, what is that, C's cap? Somebody had those, you know, these wrong-wingers had a meeting in D.C.
Yeah, CPAC.
All these candidates, yeah.
Right.
Any of them, if they run against Obama right now, I heard some polls, some political expert here in L.A. talking the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Obama is way ahead any of them, Romney or Trump or Rand, Paul or anybody. They are all way behind. Anyway, the reason I called was the Egypt thing. You know, the Mubarak regime came at the same time as Reagan regime here.
Mm-hmm.
And for 8 years, Reagan regime, and then for 4 years after that, his assistant Bush regime, they coddled this dictator tyrant. None of these wrong-wingers will talk about that. And another point is that they will say that it's happening during Obama time, the crumbling of Mubarak, and Jimmy Carter, they will say Iran. During Reagan regime, his friend, another dictator, Filipino, Ferdinand Marcos, mm-hmm. crumbled, and these wrong-wingers won't talk about that. So this is the problem with these wrong-wingers, you know,
well,
looking
it,
at the history in a different way, in their own tinted glass.
Right. Well, eventually, It may take a while, but eventually the right-wing dictators that we support, that we nurture, that we breastfeed, that we stroke and coddle and send them billions in weaponry, eventually either the people rise up and destroy them, or we get tired of them and we destroy them. We've done it so many times. I think any right-wing former military officer who wants to be dictator of some poor third-world so-called country who cuts a deal with the United States is literally cutting a deal with the devil. Because eventually, I mean, take a look, pick one, Manuel Noriega, Saddam Hussein, Marcos, Diem, it doesn't make any difference who it is. If they are a right-wing dictator, corporate America will do business with them until such time as corporate America says to the military, kill him or overthrow him or get rid of him or destabilize his government or ruin his currency. But we're tired of him. So I think any would-be military dictator ought to think twice, three times, six times, 20 times before cutting a deal with any U.S. government, especially where it concerns the Middle East. I got to leave there, Roger. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. I can't handle the idea of Donald Trump. Oh, my favorite song. I'll see you tomorrow night, y'all. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Quando sei lontana, sogno all'orizzonte, manca le parole. E io sì lo so che sei con me. Mia luna, tu sei qui con me, mio sole, tu sei qui con me.